With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Collider Ladies Night for a bucket list guest right now. We have Judy Greer on the show. Hello. I'm so excited to have you here.
That's a really nice introduction. Thank you so much.
I mean it. So usually on Ladies Night, we start out with this fancy dice tower, but the dice tower is not here right now. It's stuck in LA. So we're going to play dicey questions, but you are going to pick your own numbers. I've got a list of eight random questions here, and you get to pick three numbers, and whatever questions you get, that's where we start at least.
Okay, I'm starting with number three.
Number three, my lucky number. It's a fun one. What is something you did for a role that makes you say, I'm very glad I did that then, but never again?
Ooh, that is a good question. Well, I know we're going to talk about the thing about Pam later, but I cut my hair for a role once and I just don't grow hair. And I was like, never again. That's why the sweet baby Jesus made amazing wig makers. And I wear one in the thing about Pam. But yeah, I cut my hair, I dyed it, and it just like messed up my hair forever.
I mean, that's the reason why I've had bangs since I'm 18 years old. So you do things like that and there's no turning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What is your second number?
Five.
Number five is high-low. Can you give us one audition high and one low and then tell us what you learned from that low?
Oh. Wait, can it be one audition?
Sure.
Okay. So I went through a horrible breakup. How many years ago? Oh, well, I guess, so, okay. So the audition was for the movie, The Descendants. And I had just gone through a horrible, horrible breakup. And I was like raw and insane and out of my mind. And I thought I was going to lose my mind and go crazy every second. And I had to audition for The Descendants. I got the role, but it was the best. It was like the high and low because I was in such a horrible place. And one of my audition scenes was this scene at the end of the film where I break down and sob. And so I walk into the audition and I am like an open wound and Alexander Payne is there. And I'm like, can I do the last scene first? And he's like, sure. And I just like opened up and then I gathered myself and went backwards and did the first one and the second one. And I didn't do that one again. And so it was both like the best audition and the worst audition because best audition, because obviously nailed it, got the role, but then it turned out to be the worst audition because I didn't shoot that movie for 6 months. And in that time I fell in love with my husband. I like met him on a blind date and we fell in love. And by the time I showed up in Hawaii in June, after auditioning in January, I was over the moon, happy, like could not wipe a smile off my face. And I was like, how am I going to do this I don't even think I can recreate that. And of course, Alexander Payne, he's like all about casting. And I was like, hey, so what are you thinking for that last scene? He's like, do what you did in your audition. And I'm like, oh, I was afraid he was going to say that. So am I allowed to have that be my answer? Same audition?
I don't know. I heard a whole bunch of very good things in that answer. And it was supposed to incorporate somewhat of a low, but I see a whole bunch of you turning it into positives there. And I love it.
Also, okay, then I can give you another low, which was this TV show for HBO that Ben Stiller made 100 years ago called Heat Vision and Jack. And I think it might have been like one of Jack Black's first big roles. I did not get the role. His wife did. I'm always like, I think that's how they met. Anyway, I at the end of my audition scene, my character gets shot with some kind of laser gun and disintegrates. So I do my audition scene and then I'm like, I finish the scene and I'm like, okay, do you want to see anything different? And like Ben was like, because he directed it, well, you didn't finish the scene. And I was like, well, the end of the scene is that she evaporates. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh my God. So I had to pretend to evaporate and I did not get that role.
I mean, now you know what I have to follow up with. What does evaporating look like in an audition space?
It looks like me screaming as loud as I can and trying to get as small as I can. And I turned into the smallest ball of human that I could on the floor while screaming loudly into like,
okay.
And I remember the look on the producers' faces, and mostly I remember the look on the people in the waiting room when I walked out. You know, these casting offices are small, and I opened the door and walked out, and everyone in the waiting room was like, because of course they'd all heard me screaming. I wish I would have come out and gone, nailed it.
I mean, but, I'm impressed you did it at all. I feel like a little part of me would have died inside, and I would have been like, I can't do it.
A part of me did. But I mean, you know, I didn't get the role, and then they met and they got married and...
See, again, all positives right there.
I guess so. I'm really good at making lemonade, aren't I?
I like that skill. All right, you got one
more. Okay, number seven.
One more pick. Seven is
seven.
Movie and TV skills. If you could learn a new skill or about a different profession through a role, what would you pick and why?
Ooh. Well, I got to take a flower arranging class once for this movie I did with Jennifer Aniston. And I loved it so much. I would love to learn how to do pottery for a role. And I would also love pretty much any role that would require me to have a trainer. So like, you know, if I had to like get really good at like yoga or something, then that would be really cool if I got to have like a personal yoga instructor for like 6 weeks leading into production. I never play those kind of roles yet. But yeah, that would be the dream.
Yet is the key word there.
Yeah.
All right, before we get into the meat of it, I actually have a little bit of a bonus question for you, because it's very unusual that I film two ladies' nights in one day. And I always get hesitant to do this because if I do it, then it's going to jinx the second guest. But I had Catherine Winnick on earlier. And
I love her.
She gave me two questions that she wanted to ask you. The first one is an acting question.
Okay.
She basically wants your secret sauce. What is the key to developing a feel for comedic timing?
Oh my God. Okay, Catherine, just call me or text me. You must still have my number. I'm not going to reveal my secrets. I will have to say, and it is kind of a cop-out answer. It's the writing. Writing, man, I've been really lucky. And like when you have good writing, it's pretty easy to be funny.
Good writing, good directing, but don't sell yourself short. It's also very, very, okay, very key skill to be able to work with stuff like that and make it work as intended, if not better.
You have to grow up looking really quirky and weird and having to rely on comedic timing in order to make friends and influence people. What's her other question?
All right, her other question is a bit more serious. She wants to know what you two can do together to help Ukraine. Oh.
My God, literally, again, call me, text me, whatever. I'm in. I mean, something. So that's a really good question. That is serious. Now I'm thinking about the Ukraine and I don't feel like smiling anymore. Well, we should do something. So I'm going to reach out to her.
I like that plan. She was telling me that she just started a foundation for the cause there right now. And it sounds like
great.
Sounds like something well worth putting your weight behind.
Yeah. I mean, I've been following, like, I support the International Medical Corps and Save the Children, and both of those organizations, if you go on their website, have, you can like donate for relief. Save the Children obviously is for children in the Ukraine, and then International Medical Corps is kind of like, I always call them like the Ninja Red Cross. Like they like drop down almost like in parachutes into the middle of whatever is going on, whether it's a war in the situation, a natural disaster. And they just swoop in and do really incredible work, mostly medical related, but they do sometimes employ like engineers and stuff that can come in and help with rebuilding and restructuring after things have quieted down. Anyway, okay.
Well, in that case, everybody can find links to everything Judy just named and Catherine's organization in the description section below. Check them out.
Yes, please.
All right. Getting into the beginnings of your career here.
Yeah.
I know you got a BFA in theater, I believe.
Yes.
What would you say was the key to bridging the gap between studying in a school environment and booking your very first gigs?
Kind of feel like, strangely, like getting my education for 4 years and then forgetting everything they taught me and being myself, and then slowly going back and grabbing from that toolkit, like things I needed to have longevity in my career, was, I think, what I did looking back on it.
To get specific here, what's something that you learned studying in school that you find invaluable and you still use today when you're on set? But then what's something that all the schooling in the world never could have prepared you for when you hit your very first set?
There's so much technical stuff. I went to a theater school, so I was trained to be on stage. In my opinion, acting is acting. So you learn how to act and you learn how to break down a script and you learn about characters and you learn about beat changes and all this like technical script stuff. I did not go to a film school, so I never learned any of the technical things about acting on film. So that is something, that I wish I would have learned more of. And then things that I hang on to that I still use are like really like breaking down a script, that kind of homework, like sitting down and going through my scenes, like plotting out a character journey for myself. Like even in movies and TV shows where I have like three scenes, like there's still, I still find a beginning, middle, end, in my own head. That kind of stuff is invaluable.
Absolutely. And no small roles ever. Never, yeah. ever. I mean,
but definitely small paychecks.
Yeah, I can't really put a silver lining on that one. All right, let's get into some titles here. You have many that I'm obsessed with. So let's go with the first big Hollywood project, I guess, Jawbreaker.
Yeah.
Everyone was, I guess, pretty early on in their careers at that point. But I would say like Rose, Rebecca, and Julie, they all had a pretty good deal of experience at that point. So
yeah.
You know, stepping onto that set as your first big, big Hollywood project, was there anything that you saw any of them do that you kind of, you know, put in your back pocket and said, I'm going to try that on my next big film?
No, I mean, I don't know. Rebecca Gayhart had a cell phone, so I thought she was a billionaire. I'd never seen one of those before. It plugged into her car. It was like a car phone, actually. And I was like, she also had a Toyota 4Runner, which I was like, she's a billionaire. But that doesn't really, it's not like a work question. I can't remember. I know that like Julie Benz was auditioning like constantly while we were shooting. And that was something I picked up on. Cause I was like, oh, I need to keep, like, once this job is over, then I don't have a job. So like, you have to hustle. And I think that that was something that I took away from her, was like her ability to hustle, but be really present in the project that we were doing. And I remember, I've never talked to Darren Stein, who wrote and directed Jawbreaker, about this, but I remember feeling like he was a little stressed out that like when we weren't shooting, that we were not taking good care of ourselves, that we were still like running around trying to get jobs. And I think like he was always worried that we would be really tired because we only had one day off a week and it was a Friday. So we would like, I would just like go on like a million auditions, as many as I could on a Friday. So I had like no days off, which when you're 22 years old is fine, but I could never do that right now.
I'm glad you had someone looking out for you, but like you really did like take that vibe that Julie had then and run with it. Cause like, you don't stop. Your filmography is down to the damn floor.
I know I am a workaholic, much to my husband's chagrin.
I feel that pain. My family wants me to stop sometimes, but I can't help it. I love it so much.
I know.
Here's something else I love. I absolutely love Wes Craven so much. His films changed my life. They're a big reason why I'm here. So good. I don't know. Tell me anything at all about working with Wes Craven on Cursed.
Well, he printed out every single morning the New York Times crossword puzzle for everybody on set. There was like a stack of them. And so every morning, like as everyone showed up for work, like I can't remember if it was his assistant or script supervisor at the time, passed out the New York Times crossword puzzle. And so we were all day long working on the crossword puzzle. It was like our family. Like that was the thing we did all day as a family. I felt like, and so like you being such a huge fan of Wes Craven and being so excited to work with him and like really not having any sense of what to expect from this man, like he was so kind and lovely and thoughtful. And I guess I just didn't expect that from someone who all I'd heard about was how he would scream more blood, more blood, more blood. And like how sweet he was. And like set was really fun. It was like a really family-like environment.
Makes me happy to hear that. I'd never been shaken in my boots more than the one time I got to interview Wes, and he was just the most lovely, warm, welcoming, kind person I've ever met. And you know, when you meet your heroes and they live up to your expectations, if not exceed them, it means a lot.
And it's very upsetting when they don't. So it's always good when
that
they do.
That is true too. That is true too. All right. Halloween Kills. We'll go from one horror movie to another right now. I'll put the appropriate spoiler warnings up for this, but I can't help myself.
Too late for spoilers.
I need to know what you think about Karen's death. Cause I like, admittedly, I'm still a little sensitive about it. So
in the club,
you know, was her not making it past the second film always in the plan? And just for you personally, for your own head, what was the key to, I guess, justifying it, to making sure that, you know, you left the audience scared and upset, but also to make sure that her death felt necessary in the overall story of it?
Well, I think we won't ever really know until the next one comes out why Karen had to go. But when it was time to get ready to start shooting Halloween Kills, I got a phone call from David Gordon Green, and he was like, "We have to talk before I send you the script." And I was like, "I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk to you, Dad. I know what you're going to tell me. And why does it have to be me?" And he was like, "It has to be someone." And he's like, "And it can't be Jamie." And it can't be your daughter, because she's got to carry on the mantle. And I was like, "You, can I say it? Can I say a bad word?"
Go for it.
Fucker. I was like, "Come on, man." He's like, "I know. I'm really sorry. I'm trying to figure it out, but there's just no other way." And I was like, "Ugh."
I get it. I get
it. He's right.
I'm sensitive. It's still kind of raw, but I keep an open mind with film series like this. And as long as, you know, you justify it as you move forward, I'm okay. I'll be okay.
Yeah. He was like, "Do you want to read the next one?" And I was like, "No, it's okay. I'm dead. I can't read."
You can experience it in full when it comes out, though. Yeah. There's still hope.
Yes.
All right, let's go from one Karen to another. Another thing I'm obsessed with is Jurassic Park and World.
Oh.
I gotta know, did you have more scenes in that movie that didn't make the final cut? And actually also, like, where do you think Karen is now? Like, what is she thinking? Is she concerned about her sister?
I didn't even know that was my name. of course, she's very concerned about her sister. Yeah, I was always hoping to get to go play some more with those dinosaurs, but I never did. No, I think everything we shot was in the movie. Yeah, I think, you know, Karen's sister, I don't remember Bryce's character's name either, probably Claire.
I also know too much Jurassic. I play intense Jurassic trivia. So I've had my study time.
That makes me feel better. I do remember going to the red carpet for the premiere of Jurassic World. And like when I stepped on the carpet and I heard the score, like the song, I got like shaky. I was like, oh my God, like I knew I was a part of this major franchise, but when I saw the red carpet and like heard the song, I was just like, holy shit, like this is so major.
It is that the Jurassic theme gives me goosebumps every single time I hear it. And I watch those movies more times than I can count. All right, let's go back to the Descendants now.
Okay.
I'm very curious what it felt like for you being nominated for Screen Actors Guild Awards, because, you know, awards aren't necessary to validate anyone's work, but you've been working in this industry for so incredibly long. So when that happens, is there anything that kind of makes you feel like, you know, like, finally, I'm being recognized this way, because you deserve it for many things in addition to that?
Well, it was for like cast.
It's still, you're part of that ensemble though.
It's true. I think like the stupid thing that actors always say about the Screen Actors Guild Award is it's like the most biggest honor to be recognized by your peers. And I will say that as dumb as that is, and as much as you're like yawning when you hear it on the red carpet, it's so true. It's like, don't you just want your friends to like you? Like, don't you want like your like, I just was like, oh my God, that was an incredible night. And it was a huge honor. And it is kind of the coolest award, because you're like, oh, my peers are recognizing me. And, you know, like another cool award I always think is like People's Choice. Like the People's Choice Award is awesome, because that's like the People's Choice. That's who we're doing this for. You know what I mean? Like we're here for them. I mean, it's really cool when the Academy recognizes you, or, you know, the Hollywood Foreign Press, but like when it's the people you're actually like making all this content for, that's like the best.
And then, I get it. Yeah. It's award season. So I have all those like warm and fuzzy feelings right now, and I love it. All right, let's talk briefly about the Apes movies before jumping into Pam, because one thing that I think about a lot with motion capture work is that, you know, sometimes when you strip a lot of things away, it makes you aware of something that was always there, but you never really noticed. So when you're doing motion capture and don't have like hair, makeup, costume, all those frills, is there anything about your own craft that you started to notice that you never even realized was there or that important before?
That's a great question, because I really, like, you kind of answered the question in your question. Like, you strip everything away and you're like, am I any good at all? Like, outside of all of the stuff we decorate ourselves with, which makes it so easy, but also like easy to kind of focus the blame elsewhere if there's not a great reception for your performance. It was the director, it was the right, like, you know, like when it's really just you there. I mean, I can only imagine what those Weta guys thought of all of our performances as they're like painting on top of us these apes. It makes you feel very vulnerable. And my first day on set in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I was so self-conscious of what I looked like and my acting, and it just felt like very overwhelming and raw to be performing that way. But then like Andy Serkis is probably one of the best actors I've ever worked with in my life, and all my scenes are with him. And so, you know, like when you're working with someone at that caliber, like you just rise to the occasion, and you have two choices. Like in anything that you do, you can say like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I'm so scared. I can't do this. I have to be careful. Or you can just like jump in the deep end of a freezing cold swimming pool and be like, well, I'm just going to go for it because my other option will just, it will never translate. You never can get a great performance if you're not open.
This is so motivating. I'm so glad we're talking. I feel like I'm going to walk out of this room with like a dose of positivity and inspiration.
Yeah. Before. My choir teacher when I was in high school said, when in doubt, sing loud. So I usually just go for it.
I got to embrace that. All right. The thing about Pam. All right. Let's start with the show's unique style, because I've got to imagine that you kind of don't feel the full force of the end product when you're just reading words on a page in a script. So how Jenny and the team kind of help you prepare for what the tone of it all would be?
Yeah. I mean, we were talking a lot about Fargo for tone reference. I don't tend to require tone references when I work. I'm happy to know what are you thinking, but like for me, I'm gonna give you a performance and I'm gonna rely on my director to, you know, make adjustments. Because I don't know, I think maybe some actors would disagree. I don't feel like that's my job. Like my job is to, you know, tell the truth and listen. And so going into it, having like kind of like heard Fargo tossed around a little bit, I was given access. We were all given access to all of the reporting that Dateline did and videos and transcripts and books that Jenny had read. And then Jenny Klein, our showrunner, who was, I don't even understand. I think she's like a robot angel or something. She was always available. I mean, like 24 hours a day. Like I would prepare late at night for the next day. And I'd be like, oh God, I don't want to text her. I don't want to bug her, but I would text her. And she would like respond right away with like a video or a complete answer to my question, or just call me and be like, we can talk about this really quick. Like she was always there for us. And so in that respect, I just felt like we had everything we needed. We had as much or as little as we needed to tell the story. And, you know, like I said, like this tone is difficult and she nailed it. And so did our directors.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by that quality of it. I mean, this kind of might be more of a question for the writers, but I guess just in your opinion, what do you think it is about drama with, I guess, a comedic edge that made it the best possible way to convey this story?
Well, this story is tricky because it's a true story and because the investigation is still open. They still have not convicted a murderer. And so it can't be a comedy. It's not a comedy. It's a tragedy. You know what I mean? Like this is a horrible tragedy for so many people. Like two people were killed. Three, if you count Pam's mom, killed, died. That's, you know, she died. But anyway, like there were three lives lost and that affects, you know, countless family members and loved ones. And so what we were trying to do is to highlight the absurdity of the story without commenting on it being funny or anything like that. You know, that's why the tone was so tricky. It wasn't like, it's hard to make a comedy. It's tricky tone because you're dealing with something that's very intense and very upsetting and shining a light on like the absurdity of how it was all handled. So that's what I think we got right, which I was so happy with because we were always wanting to be respectful of the families.
Very well done in that respect. Okay, all right. Good. I'm going to add one more question in, and it's specific to episode 4. It's a scene that really caught my eye. So With that particular scene, it's the one where Pam comes in and tells Askey about Betsy's crush on her. Yeah. How does your approach to a scene change when the dialogue is largely in someone else's hands, but your reaction shots, I mean, I would say are probably the most important part of that particular scene, trying to figure out what's really going through Askey's mind and what she thinks about the story that she's hearing.
Yeah, that's fun because like you always wish the camera could be on you for the first take, because you just know that like when you do hear this stuff for the first time, regardless of like how many times I've read it to memorize my lines, like the first time I hear Renee say this as Pam, like it's going to be my favorite reaction, but that is not always the case. So then I try to memorize, I try to react in the moment to her, but also like memorize what I'm doing. And then it helps. I have Matt Grant, actor, on the other side of me, and playing off of him and like us trying not to collapse in laughter. That helps a lot, like trying to contain something. And in this case, Leah is containing like her, like, what the fuck is going on thoughts. Judy is trying to contain the like laughing at the absurdity of the situation and that this actually happened. That I can play, like I can play Judy. I can kind of mix them up together and like shake it up in the snow globe and like I think have it work. But you know, it's like, you just kind of have to really be focused and listen, and that's acting. You have to try to make it sound like you heard it the first time, 20 times in a row, you know, but it was hard and it was funny and it was fun. And Renee is just so incredible. Like everything that comes out of her mouth is so incredible. And she's so professional. So even though she's so fun and fun to work with, like she is like laser focused, which helped me a lot.
The whole show is great, or at least up to episode 4, because that is what I've seen. That scene in particular is not going to leave my mind anytime soon.
I'm so happy to hear it, because I was so excited the day that we were going to shoot it. It was one of my favorite scenes. I was so excited about it. And then when it was over, I was so sad. Like I get so sad when my favorite scenes are over and I'm like,
I have like a million and one follow-up questions and more questions about Pam and like all your other projects that I love and we haven't spoken about. That means the door is wide open for more ladies' nights in the future.
I'll be back.
Huge, huge congratulations on the show. And thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much. I will come back, I promise.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.